Wow, Golazzo back with another fat slice of Serie A as Napoli climb higher than a certain manager's eyebrows, and Juve are also big winners, and Spal, but not Spalletti. We ask, Atalanta, should they be your Italian team? And are Fiorentina back? Sound there of Lit Fever. Top Florentine funsters enjoying La Viola's opening salvo of their Serie A season, a whopping 6-1 against Chievo. Some weekend in Italy, a weekend that's been enjoyed by James Horncastle.
Hello.
Who was in Turin.
Was.
And Richard Hughes, who was probably in Bournemouth, were you, this weekend?
I was in Zurich, actually, for my day job, yeah. I wasn't too far away from the peninsula, but unfortunately not across the border.
What were you doing in Zurich?
Just work. I was at two games, Grasshoppers against Sion. I almost forgot that it was a memorable game. And then FC Zurich against Basel on the Sunday. So.
Right.
But
scouting.
Looking at my phone. Scouting, yeah. But looking at my phone and keeping up to date with everything happening in real football.
Right.
Serie A.
In real football.
It was a massive weekend. It was almost as exciting as a Bournemouth game this weekend in Serie A.
That's
because you guys are off to a cracking start, haven't you?
Seven points out of nine into the next round of the cup, so it's been a good. Which makes a change for us, actually. This is the first game of the season against Cardiff. It's the first time in the Premier League we've won our opening fixture. Actually, we've lost the other 3 years that we were in it, so it'll be interesting to see how we can develop the season with a bit of momentum for once.
If you want more Bournemouth chat, listener, tune in Thursday to the Totally Football Show, because we'll be all about the Cherries. Right now, though, let's get back onto the City. 34 goals scored this weekend. Some absolute peaches. Pastore. Antonucci.
Oh, wow.
Per Antonucci! Al volo, col destro, fa un gol meraviglioso, Antonucci!
And how about that Torino goal?
What, the Belotti one?
Yeah.
Grandissimo lancio, Belotti, il controllo, la porta è vuota! Andrea Belotti!
Who put that ball up for him?
Iago Falque.
It was Falque.
Yeah.
Wow.
Who's started the season very well. Seemed to have his bags packed, was told by Mazzarri, you're off, go to Sevilla. And he's been Torino's man of the match in both their games against Roma and Inter. But what was Handanovic doing there? He went completely AWOL.
It's not been a great start for Inter. But we'll maybe touch on that in a second or two, because there are three teams on top of the table. One of them is Juventus, not surprisingly. You went to their game as usual, James. 2-0.
I went to Ronaldo's game,
right?
Because Ronaldo is bigger than that club, as I've discovered over the last few weeks.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, just in how obsessed everyone is with Ronaldo rather than Juventus, really.
And his son has now joined their
under-9s.
Under-9s.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, where I think Benatia's kid plays as well. I think Andrea Pirlo, his son, is waiting for a trial with the under-16s. Yeah, there's quite a lot of the kind of boys of the Juventus players kicking a ball around with Juventus's youth teams at the moment.
Yeah, it's troubling how everyone's obsessed with Ronaldo. What do you think about his move to Serie A, Richard?
Well, I was surprised, first and foremost, that he went, and not surprised when I found out some of the tax connotations about why he may leave Spain and go to.
Oh, I see. Because of the ongoing issues with the.
Well, yeah,
Spanish
I think the more favourable in terms of his image rights and stuff like that. So it's.
Were you aware at Bournemouth that he might be available?
We made a play, but the possibilities that Juve were offering.
Because you've played against him, haven't you?
Oh yes, yeah. So I've got headbutted by him as well. So
really?
Yeah.
What were the circumstances of that?
Sorry, the circumstances. Okay, we were. I was picking him up from a corner, and don't know if you know this, he's very good in the air. And I thought, I can't be marking Ronaldo in a straight fight from a corner. So the first corner, I sort of used all my Italian upbringing to try and gain an advantage. So, like, leant into him, fell into him, so that we didn't have a straight fight. It was essentially the ball just sailed over us. So the second corner came in, and he knew that this player, not me, didn't know me, he knew this player would be picking me up. So he went to try and push off, and I just thrust down his hand, and he ended up face to face. And as you know when like two players come forward like stags and sort of try and meet heads.
Rupt.
And and I wasn't up for this. And Steve Bennett was the referee just to her right, and because I didn't make the motion to go closer to Ronaldo, he had to come even further, and it made it like a sound, and it was like it didn't hurt, and I didn't go down.
But did he get booked?
He got sent off. He was sent off, yeah.
You got Ronaldo sent off?
Yeah, and
with your dark arts.
Absolutely. That's what happened, yeah. So I...
Brilliant.
But I mean, smarter than...
This is the most memorable thing that he's done in Juventus so far.
I thought you were going to say this. Yeah, and he would have been right. It's the most memorable part of my career.
He put Sorrentino in hospital, you know, in the first game with whiplash, broken nose. And then, again, one of the few things he did of note against Lazio was nearly give Wallace a need of a hip replacement. Ooh. Injured him sort of before Wallace came back on the pitch and actually played very well against Ronaldo.
Well, we'll hear more about your defensive
on
tricks
Thursday,
later on,
again,
Richard.
Yeah,
actually,
Chelsea,
maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. So, meantime, there were goals scored by other Juventus players. Mm. A wonderful kind of half-volley, would you say, by Pjanic. And then Mandzukic, who, as we said on Monday, had the kind of poor taste to put away a ball that Ronaldo was trying to score with.
One that Ronaldo should have scored with. Yeah. And then instead it hit his back leg and bounced up and Mandzukic finished where he couldn't.
Mm. Well, 2-0 for Juve. As we were surmising last Thursday, though, the best game probably on Saturday was many hundreds of kilometres south at the San Paolo when Napoli took on Milan. Carlo Ancelotti's first game at the San Paolo in the league. For the second week in a row, they faced the top side. Second week in a row, they went behind Richard. Second week in a row, they came back and won. How impressed are you with King Carlo?
No, I'm impressed. Yeah, a hugely difficult act to follow, as experienced and as successful as Ancelotti's been to follow Sarri and how particular his team were. Must be amazingly difficult and not been an easy start in terms of the fixtures, especially going down in games as well. I mean, to say the least, it's not easy. Lazio and Milan are back-to-back games, very difficult going behind in the games. But really good signs that they've managed to come back and win both. I think if you look back at where perhaps Ancelotti was most successful in that Milan team he built, a lot of it was done on spirit and passion. And that Milan team, which lost the Istanbul final against Liverpool, would go in incredible runs of form or momentum during games. And then the opposite at times is proved in that game, or Deportivo La Coruña in the season before. So he seems to be one of those types of managers that galvanises a team over a period of time. And it's interesting to see that philosophy, or otherwise it may be, maybe something, maybe not, but already transmit itself into this Napoli team in its early days. I haven't seen them live because I'm busy watching things like Grasshoppers and Sion, but I look forward to seeing his Napoli.
Well, you saw this game live. Did you watch it in the Allianz Stadium?
I did watch it.
Uh-huh.
And I think, as Richard said, to come back from behind, not just as they did against Lazio, but two goals down, they hadn't come back from that kind of deficit in more than 7 years.
Really?
And you could say this was already in the team because I think they recovered 28 points from losing positions last season. But Sally was saying, as a Chelsea manager only a few weeks ago, that in Italy, you know, when teams are 2-0 down, they just stop playing. Well, this Napoli side didn't do that.
Torino
didn't do that.
Roma.
Roma did not do that. So
yeah, it was an interesting weekend for that quote, which was a strange one thing to come out with, but some terrific goals in that.
And also, I think one of the great things about that game, towards the end, when it was, 2-2, Ancelotti really went for it. And we got to see, not for the first time, but certainly with them all healthy, fit, ready to go, Milik up front, Mertens, Insigne, Cahill all playing together, and his willingness to play a slightly different way than we saw under Maurizio Sarri.
You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show.
Good work for Napoli then. They are top with Juventus and Spal, uniquely with one of your old friends. Rich, is that right?
No, Filippo Costa is a player that used to play at Bournemouth for all of 3 months.
Right.
He was actually I was his boss, James. I helped recruit him,
okay.
So he's a friend of mine.
All right.
But no, we signed him from Chievo Verona at the time on loan with a view to permanent, never transpired. And when someone...
Was it for a dramatically inflated transfer fee?
Well, at Chievo, it would have been. That's why we didn't exercise the option. Let him go back to Chievo. And then he ended up going to Spal on loan and then worked his way up. Got promotion last year. So delighted to see him involved again at the weekend. And
as involved as that man Antonucci,
absolutely
the former Leeds favourite.
I don't think he was favourite, but
all right, former Leeds player.
He was with Massimo Cellino. He was Cellino's favourite.
Yeah,
that was a fantastic goal.
It was a bit like the one that Dzeko scored a week ago, in terms of emphatic volley.
Van Basten-style volley.
Fantastic technique. Not from
further out, acute
an angle.
Yeah.
A bit more straight on.
Lovely curl on it as well.
Yeah, and a great ball in from Lazzari, their kind of wing back, who has been there since Spal were no longer Spal. He was at the club that was called Giacomense, which when Spal went out of business, basically the current owner needed to find a club to fuse Spal with so he could get the, let's say, so-called sporting title, the name of the club back.
Mm.
So Spal kind of absorbed the Giacomense. Giacomense became Spal. And
right.
then this rise up the leagues has happened since then. And Lazzardi's been there right from the bottom to the top.
Right. Well, it's a bizarre story. It really is. They're busy playing, of course, at the Dall'Ara because they're redoing their stadium,
the Mazza.
The Mazza, Paolo Mazza. They're going to increase the capacity to a whopping 16,000.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of the best atmospheres in the league last year.
Mm.
And to be honest, we have seen that when clubs either come up for the first time, like Crotone, going to the Ezio Scida was, you know, the atmosphere there was magnificent. And you could see, I mean, Spal, who hadn't been in the league for close to half a century, when they got back up, back-to-back promotions, yeah, obviously a full house more or less every week.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go for it. But they should play at the Renata Dell'Ara every week because they keep winning there.
Right. Keep winning a million derbies as
yeah.
well against
Bologna
and now Parma with that Antonucci goal. Well, there's so many things to talk about. Some really key games, one of which was Monday night's Roma-Atalanta. Another was Fiorentina's extraordinary performance against Chievo, which is coming up in a bit. But Adam Sharp says, don't forget to big up Belotti's amazing goal and Sidigu's last-minute world-class save in what was a 2-2 draw into throwing away a two-goal lead. And given that we were among the many people saying they are the team that will challenge Juve, so far it's not working out for them at all.
I mean, they had been proclaimed the anti-Juve by the sports papers in Italy. And Spalletti, you know, after the Sassuolo game, was saying, at the moment, we're anti-Nessuno. We're, you know, we're not a competition for anyone. And to be honest, against Sassuolo, they were awful. And they were, I think, Sassuolo's manager, Di Zerbi, outcoached Spalletti in that game. First half of this one, they were dominant. It wasn't a contest. Yeah, they were 2-0 up. Torino hardly got a kick. And everything seemed to be going well in front of, 59,000 at San Siro. A lot of enthusiasm around the team, notwithstanding the result the week before. Although there were banners up there saying, just, Mr. No excuses, no words, run, fight. Let's get this season started.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the second half, and to be honest, you might know a bit more about this than me, Richard, but a lot of the talk is about August football in terms of, you know, these players have been coming back in drips and drabs from the World Cup. You've got three Croats in that team, Veselko, Brozovic and Perisic, who didn't only get to the World Cup final, but remember how they got to the World Cup final. All of their knockout games went to extra time. Yeah, in the second half, they just disappeared.
So you think that rather than Walter Mazzarri, former Inter and Watford manager, making wizard substitutions?
Look, he made some good changes.
Uh-huh.
They played a little bit higher up the pitch in the second half. They were more courageous. He moved Roberto Soriano's position. He pushed him up. So they were playing 3-4-3. So they were man for man against Inter's back three. And all of a sudden, were forcing Inter mistakes. But as Spalletti said, the game turned ultimately on Samir Handanovic going walkabout. And yeah, that, I think, encouraged Torino. They then brought on Ljajic, who started to pull some strings and got back into the game. But Inter could have won it at the end, were it not for Sidigu.
Mm.
But yeah, their second half, they completely disappeared. I think partly because some of their key players are still tired after the World Cup. And we yet to see Nainggolan start or even play. And their other big signing, Kete Baldidiao, is coming on sort of as an impact sub, but that's it. We're still yet to see the kind of Inter that has been put together in the transfer window.
Early days. Well, in a second or two, let's talk about the extraordinary match that took place Monday night at the Stadio Olimpico, which ended up like this. Roma-Atalanta on Monday night. Often an exciting fixture at this one. It certainly proved that on this occasion. Roma doing almost like a kind of medley of their Champions League form. First half, a bit like they were at Anfield against Liverpool in the semi-final, and then very much the second half, a Barcelona-style comeback after they'd managed to go 3-1 One down. You've seen the Pastore goal, first of all.
Ooh. No, beautiful finish. Absolutely yeah. beautiful finish. Meant every bit of it as well. The first time I saw it, I needed three or four replays to figure out whether he actually went for that. Take a little bit pace off it. Gave Golini absolutely no chance.
Beautiful. Because it's so languid. It's almost like he's walking and it hits him.
Mm. But you describe it well, languid, but he made it look quite graceful almost yeah. at the same time, just absolutely. Taking the pace off. And
the connection's so sweet, as
isn't
well.
It? Yeah.
Mm. It's a back heel, everybody. If you haven't seen it, he's on the edge of the box and he just kind of strokes it home with his heel. It's glorious. And what followed wasn't glorious for Roma at all. Why, James?
They were completely outplayed, James. I mean, Roma allowed 16 shots in that first half, which is, I think, a record going back for 14 or 15 years. It was no contest. Atalanta won every tackle, won every header. And I think what was really surprising about this is when the teams came out, there was some uproar because it was clear that Gasperini was prioritising Thursday's Europa League preliminary game, the playoff against Copenhagen. So we saw sort of seven changes.
Eight changes, actually, from the previous match.
Yeah, and a lot of new signings. Some guys who'd actually never played for Atalanta before. So you had Zapata and Rigoni up front.
And Rigoni looks amazing, doesn't he?
Rigoni looks very special. Caused Roma all kinds of problems.
Zapata looked like he did as well, didn't he?
Zapata absolutely monstered Manolas. Mm. I mean, we talked about Manolas getting the equaliser and somewhat redeeming himself. He had one of the worst games I think I've seen in a Roma shirt, and that was a lot of that was down to Zapata because he just couldn't cope with him. He absolutely dominated, and it's quite frightening actually thinking that Gasperini now has a kind of really physical front man who can score goals, because Petagna, over the last couple of years, was able to pin centre backs, hold up the play, and lay off the ball to people like Papu Gomez, but he couldn't actually score. Whereas Zapata now can just floor some of the defenders. And Di Francesco, after the game, was saying at halftime, if I could, I would have taken off seven or eight players.
Right. Was this before he went to hospital?
So, no, he fractured his hand punching the dugout later in the game. This was actually when Roma had got to 3-3, because it looked like while they could have got a winner, so could Atalanta. All tactics just went out the window as they kind of started playing.
Who did Roma finish with up front?
Oh, it was incredible. They had Cengizunde, Dzeko, Justin Kluivert, Schick, Pastore. They were playing 3-2-5, something like that. It was just insane.
Yeah. Italian football, eh?
Yeah.
They didn't have Alisson, of course. Mm. To what extent did Olsen's performance weigh in this?
Kept being beaten at the same post. Yeah, I think some of the defending in front of him didn't help him, left him looking a little bit exposed. But one of the lines in the press afterwards is that they sold all their kind of sure things in Alisson, Nainggolan and Strootman, and they bought a lot of hope, you know, in terms of, we talked about the kids, Kluivert and that sort of thing. And Olsen getting into his, you know, what, late 20s, early 30s now, this should be his time to shine. But not a lot of people convinced by him up until now.
All right. Well, it's another Monchi's project. So Milan are going to be Roma's next opponents. That's Friday night. That's a huge game at San Siro. But on the subject of Atalanta, wouldn't it be great to have a former Atalanta player here in the studio with us to discuss the La Dea and their, once again, extraordinary start to a season? I mean, first of all, is this form that they're showing right now, and that the performance against Roma, for example, is that down to the fact that because they're in the Europa League, they're just way ahead of everybody else in preparation?
Not necessarily. I mean, you look at, in the Premier League, you look at Burnley, haven't necessarily transmitted the form, even qualifying through various stages, but haven't managed to necessarily bring back their league form from last year. But as James said, when I saw the lineup for the Roma game, I was surprised that they were prioritising the Copenhagen game so much. I thought they've almost sacrificed this game. But obviously Gasperini knows that a few of these players that James has told us about were ready to produce a performance. I was also surprised in the quotes before the first Copenhagen game just how important this game was for them, which is great to see. I do like when teams actually give Europe their full attention, especially a team like Atalanta, who it's not as if they're there every season. They're not bored with it, definitely aren't. They had a good run last year.
Amazing run last
really
year.
Good. Yeah. And the fans crave it, even back in the 90s when they got the Cup Winners' Cup semi-final. They really enjoyed that. They still talk about it and still compared last year's ventures to back then.
Were you there when they were in the Cup Winners' Cup?
I wasn't playing. Was it early 90s? James will tell us what year it was. Was 90, 90, I think it too was, accurate.
Yeah, 92, 93, was it?
So I would have been an 11-year-old in Nepal. I can sort of remember this team, Malines, as they call them, that they played along the way, which I then... Where have they disappeared to? They're not called Malines, they're actually called Mechelen, and that's why I thought they'd disappeared out of business. But that's where the Italians are, Malines with an S at the end. So yeah, I remember it vaguely, being at the club at the same time, but any of the build-up or being at any of the games, I can't remember doing that. But I thought Gasperini, refreshing it was to hear about someone talk about the Europa League in this manner, and clearly did prioritise it. He stressed how important it was before the 0-0 draw against Copenhagen, where apparently they battered them again.
Absolutely. And did
everything but score. Against Roma, he took no chances, changed 7 or 8 players, and then left the others fresh for Thursday night. So
including Papu Gomez. Yeah, Thursday's going to be huge away in Copenhagen. Richard, you mentioned the run last year with, of course, the phenomenal performances against an Everton side not enjoying the best of seasons, but Lyon, all sorts of other clubs. If it's fair to say they're punching above their weight right now, Atalanta, how are they doing it so consistently?
It has to be the manager. I know they've always had a good organisation, a good structure, and a good consistency at boardroom level, but the manager, and last time I was on, we were talking about Gasperini, his ability to make his teams play like teams, so almost the sum of the parts more important than the individuals within it. So interesting to see players that leave him or leave Atalanta, how they go on and do. Brian Cristante, of course, had such a great time under Gasperini, who seemed to realise the promise of his early days at Milan, that then went a little bit stale at Benfica, and a couple of loan moves in Serie A. So he is definitely someone who is very good at building teams, right from his Genoa times, maybe before then even. Perhaps didn't deal well with the superstars at Inter.
Yeah, I mean, he made quite a pointed comment after this game, because he was receiving a lot of praise from the studio, and he was saying, look, I've had great players in my time, and he named the players he had at Genoa, so like Milito, Motta, but I've never had a great club. And I think what he was saying was that Inter at the time that he went there, yes, they had all the names, the profile, but at the time, how they were run, how they approached things, not a great club. Maybe you'll get that chance again one other day, because the job he's doing at Atalanta is extraordinary.
Are Atalanta on their way to becoming a great club? Can they build on these? Or is the kind of realtà of Bergamo just one that they'll always be a provincial side?
Yeah, I think they always will be. I don't think the club is big enough for it to grow any further. I got a really fanatic fan base, always well followed. Even if they did get relegated in Serie B, the curva behind the goal, always very vocal and always behind their team. But I don't know if there's any. I mean, the stadium will always be what it is. The city.
Well, they're now reinvesting all the money they got from that that team which they broke up when they sold Kessi, Conti, Gagliardini, the first good Gasperini side, and they're reinvesting that to actually refurbish the Atleti Azzurri d'Italia.
Catchy name, isn't it?
What strikes me about them, and again, because you're involved in recruitment, this is always impressive to me, is that they've almost got two teams now. Two teams that are as competitive as the other. There's no drop-off, for example, when, as we saw, they make 8 changes. That comes from the manager, but it also comes from being smart in recruitment and finding players that fit the manager's way of playing.
Yeah, and Giovanni Sartori is excellent at doing it. Once of Chievo, I think, when Chievo came through the leagues, and a very understated gentleman, very nice man, out of the limelight, clearly, because he just leaves it up to the team and the players. The sort of guy that you'll see once a season in the most obscure... He wasn't in Zurich watching Grasshopper Sion, but he's the type of guy that you would see in a game where you're thinking no one else will be here, and it's like, oh, this Giovanni Sartori, who does his travelling, which is not regular for a lot of the sporting directors in Italy, like to sit on the bench, some of them even, or like to be in the stand, the cameras, like, this is where I'll be, pointed at me. Whereas he's completely the opposite. He goes out, watches games, knows players. And I think Atalanta reap the benefits of that.
We get loads of questions from people asking who we would advise them to take as an Italian side. Is there one reason you would say Atalanta?
One reason is the name. It's a standout name, isn't it?
Share their emblem with Bournemouth as well.
Absolutely. Importantly, importantly. A lot of the teams in Italy are named after the city, or when we're talking about Spal, which is another unique name. But Atalanta has got that unique, nice-sounding, I believe. Maybe I'm biased and just used to saying it since I was a child.
Atalanta being the Greek name for Diana, I think, listeners.
It sounds
certainly,
right.
Certainly
yeah,
a classical goddess. That's why they're known as La Dea, as with, I guess, Hellas Verona. They were...
she a Greek runner? Is that a goddess of something to do with running? Was I that think that's was, why the emblem yeah. with the hair blowing
Her hair
back?
Is certainly flowing in the wind.
Right. Atalanta was a virgin huntress in Greek mythology. I'm pretty sure the equivalent of Diana.
She had to run to hunt, so therefore the flowing locks.
Bow and arrow, all that stuff. Right.
Should know this. I should have had a history lesson at 11. Right.
Also, if you were going to pick up Atalanta as your team, you could go and...
Yes, absolutely.
You could go to Bergamo.
Yeah.
Beautiful place.
Wonderful.
You might be trying to get to Milan, but you could go to Bergamo.
What, if you're cheaper flying flight. With a certain cheap airline.
No, but it's an exciting town.
And a good atmosphere at the stadiums as well. I mentioned a bit disparagingly about the Stadio Atleti Azzurri d'Italia, which I shouldn't do. It's the first big stadium, I played in. But it's a homely place. So they've got a very good youth team as well. It's a club that's run by the Percassi family very well. So I think that if you support them today, they won't be out of business tomorrow. So stick with them. They'll have great times like they're having at the minute. Won't always be like this, as I mentioned. I think if Gasperini leaves, of course, it depends on how they reinvest the money, and they've always had a decent youth team. So I think you're in it for the long haul if you choose them.
Also, I mean, this is, as you mentioned, James, it's a place that's not far away from Milan.
Mm.
People from Bergamo could support Inter and AC Milan if they chose, but instead they support Atalanta. And one of the reasons for that is Percassi and people before that get to them very early. They send every newborn baby in Bergamo an Atalanta shirt or replica kit. So there you go. That's a beautiful initiative.
That is it. That's a lovely gesture. Mm. Boys and girls.
Boys and girls, of course, yeah.
Nice. Hey, biggest win of the weekend. 6-1 for Fiorentina over Chievo. Are Fiorentina back? Yes, La Viola, a club that has been through so much over the years. The Brady penalty that denied them a title, the Baggio transfer that sealed their hatred of Juventus, bankruptcy, Calciopoli, Cecchi Gori, Serie D. Last season, of course, most seriously, the tragic death of their captain, Davide Astori. This season, they've begun in remarkable fashion. There seems to be a real optimism again about La Viola after their eighth place finish last time around. They've had an extraordinary long pre-season, 2 months or so, James. What? Why?
Well, because when Milan initially got kicked out of Europe by UEFA, Fiorentina were readying themselves to take their place. Atalanta were going to go straight into the group stages, and Fiorentina were going to play the preliminaries. And as we've seen with Atalanta the last few weeks, that involves playing three games to get to the playoff and then hopefully to the group stages. So they've been in training camp pretty much since June 26th. Yeah, they were raring to go match day one, but their game got postponed after the tragic events of the Morandi Bridge.
In Genoa. Well, all that bottled up energy had to go somewhere, and it went up Chievo, basically. This happened.
Milenkovic poi calcia! E trova un gol incredibile! Nikola Milenkovic! Palla che resta lì, calcio a Pessella! E poi Gerson a porta vuota, mette in mezzo Simeone Benassi! Di testa, trova il gol del 3-0! Benassi supera un avversario, poi va da Chiesa. Chiesa! Per il poker della Fiorentina, Federico Chiesa! Tocca Benassi, tutto solo, controlla Benassi! In area, tocco per Simeone! Tra le gambe di Seculin, goleada della Fiorentina!
6-1, the final score there, Richard. Excitingly, Simeone with his dad in the stands watching El Cholo.
Yeah, I saw the images at the end of the game where it looked as if Diego Simeone was slightly distracted at the beginning on his phone. the rest of his family had spotted him trying to wave up at Pioli as well, trying to wave at Simeone Senior. I like this Fiorentina team. I liked them last season as well. I think they play a really interesting brand of football. Sometimes a little bit vulnerable because they were almost too honest in trying to make the game a little bit expansive and then could be picked off. But still, a decent season they had last time around. They've got some really interesting players. They've tried to do it in a way of sort of buying younger players with a resale value. I think that's fair to say. They did really well to hold on to Chiesa in Benassi. And Veretout, when he comes back from suspension, I really like Jordan Veretout. I know he had a really rough time of it in He had a poor season when he was over with Aston Villa in England, but not surprised at all to see him do really well in his first season in Serie A. I think he's perfect for the league. You have Piazza as well, of course. It should be an exciting outright signing, I believe, James, as well. Wasn't even a loan in the end, is that right?
I think, yeah, I think there's an obligation to buy.
Obligation.
Yeah.
And with Simeone, of course, at the in that front three, yeah, results like the one, okay, Chievo, I think, could be a little bit beyond the sell-by date in Serie A, perhaps a little bit slow and vulnerable to a young, enterprising, attacking Fiorentina team. So it won't necessarily be 6-1 every week, but definitely a team who do want to play on the front foot and attack, and they've got some really interesting players.
Mm. They've got such a history of interesting players. I think that's why a lot of people, I mean, the shirts have played a role in that as well. A lot of people think the Fiorentina jerseys of the 90s, obviously not that one, but the others, the 7-Up one,
yes,
the Nintendo. They're some of the most cherished.
Fila.
Yeah. Maglietas.
I didn't talk about that. I didn't like seeing the black shorts at the
No,
weekend.
Me neither.
Are they there to stay?
No, I don't think so. Correct. But I don't think there was much of a colour clash with what Kiev were wearing anyway. No. So, yeah. But their biggest win since 92.
Since 92 when they beat...
I think it was Ancona.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Good knowledge. For a while, under the Della Valle, it seemed like this was a club that was really building... And building in the right way, a lot of plans for a new stadium, training ground, all this kind of thing. And then that very much hit the buffers, and the Della Valleys have, to a degree, stepped down from their roles with the club. And it seemed almost like Fiorentina were in the doldrums a bit. Is there now upward momentum again?
I think so. I think this time last year, the Della Valleys were getting a lot of criticism because they essentially got rid of everybody and they slashed the wage bill. And I think the fans at that moment were calling for them to go. They kind of put the club up for sale, but weren't able to attract a buyer. And they launched this kind of new project. They brought back their old sporting director, Pantaleo Corvino, who's very good principally at finding, you know, sort of hidden gems in the Balkans. And we've seen them put together an extremely young team. I think one of the things that not only galvanized this group of players, but also the city and kind of reconnected them was that tragedy, which happened with Davide Astori. I think that brought fans back to the stadium, reminded them just how much Fiorentina reflects Florentines and the civic kind of pride of that of that particular part of Italy.
Those amazing scenes of the funeral, no, with tens of thousands on the street.
And Astori's shirt was still hung up in the dressing room before the game against Chievo. Pioli was saying that he's with us every day. They've also renamed the training ground after him, and they were really keen to acknowledge what Tomovic, the Chievo defender, did in that game. He scored Chievo's only goal. And then, he was someone who used to play in defence with Fiorentina, with Astori, and put up the numbers 1 and 3 with his fingers in memory of him. But I think that forced what was already a young team last year to grow up and mature in a hurry. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons why they doubled down in the transfer window and thought, actually, let's keep buying young players. And they've got the youngest team in Serie A, average age of 23. The two oldest players in the team are the two centre-backs, Petzela and Victor Hugo, 27. And the team that they put out against Chievo at the weekend was, the youngest in Europe's top five leagues after Lille. Team that's 23.
Really exciting sort of front three there with Piazza, as you say, and Simeone up the middle. What pace he's got.
Yeah.
And Chiesa out on the other flank. Exciting to have Simeone and Chiesa's sons there. On the subject of sons, kind of a little bit random this, but we mentioned Ronaldo Jr. joining the Juve under-9s. In recent weeks, you may have spotted Francesco Renzi, the son of the former Italian Premier Matteo Renzi, has joined Bologna. Francesco's a forward. He's 17 years of age, so he's obviously pretty talented if he's with them at that age.
And do you know who else is playing with him?
At Bologna?
Yeah.
Yeah, Paluca's son.
Paluca's son, yeah.
Also a forward.
Yeah.
He's a year younger, but probably in the same kind of way. That would be what, Primavera, would that be? Or is that...
Yeah, that would be Primavera, late Allievi, Berretta, maybe.
Okay.
Primavera.
All right.
Andrea Sottil, you remember Andrea Sottil? Not quite the superstar of the people we're talking. His son's at Fiorentina as well.
Yeah.
He's meant to be a really top player as well in the making.
Yeah. Right. It's exciting, isn't it? Anyway, so Fiorentina, I mean... Batigo, Edmundo, Rui Costa. Who's your favourite Fiorentina player?
Batistuta.
Really?
I love that. Batistuta, Rui Costa era.
Yeah.
Probably couldn't pick between the two of them, I suppose. Batigo's celebrations as well just sort of trumped it. But Rui Costa, fantastic player then, underrated globally at that time. And that was the Fiorentina team that, I don't know how close they got to the title, but they seemed to win every week and maybe
they were
run
a carnival away from actually winning the title.
Yeah, Edmundo, 98.
He had it in his contract that he was allowed to go home for the Rio Carnival. And
left just as Baggio had torn his
Battistuta.
Battistuta, yes. Yeah.
So Battistuta had just done, and I think he was leaving that day or the next day, and everyone assumed, well, you won't go now, Edmundo, you're our last hope. But off he went. Off he went. Magnificent. Oh, Luca Toni. There's another Fiorentina legend for you. Baggio.
Baggio, of course, yeah.
Baggio. All right. Am I getting overexcited about them on the basis of one 6-1 victory, or is there something actually happening there?
I think what you'll find, I think, will be consistency and progression from last season. Mm-hmm. What was it, 8th place?
Yeah.
It's going to be, I mean, the places above them were taken by teams that you'd still expect to be up there in one order or another. No, you're not getting excited unnecessarily, depending on where your expectations are. I mean, I think they are going to be a really good, exciting team to watch with some young players that could progress and be sold on. And dare say, the Fiorentina fans won't be happy with it. But in the same vein that some of the better players that you mentioned there have been.
Well, on that, Rich, I mean, you look at the goalkeeper market this summer with Kepa, Alisson, all these players going for
Lafont.
Huge. And they've signed Lafont for, I think, 7 or 8 million. He's really impressed in pre-season. He's already got a load of top flight appearances under his belt since he was a teenager. I think he's still a teenager. Well, I mean, the future, I wouldn't be surprised if they're getting that kind of money for him.
All right. Yeah. Sunday at 5 o'clock English time, they'll be hosting Udinese. Other matches this weekend, we mentioned on Friday evening, Milan hosting Roma. Bologna up against Inter. Juventus have a trip to the Tardini to take on Parma on Saturday. Hmm. Parma's side who are struggling a little bit in these opening rounds.
Did Gervinho going up against Bonucci and Chiellini?
That was extraordinary. Gervinho.
Yeah.
His hair's held up remarkably well.
For now.
Okay. Anyway, well, that's all very exciting. And you've got Chelsea at the weekend, haven't you, Richard?
Back in England, of course. Yeah, we've got Saturday's Chelsea. Yeah.
Will you be there for that, or will you be?
I will be. I will be last week away scouting, and this week watching pick and choose them. Stamford Bridge away is a good one to be at.
So nice.
Good food.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, we'll hear a bit more from you about that game in Thursday's Totally Football Show, rounding up all the weekend's action in the Premier League and beyond. Meantime, that's it for this Golazzo. So many thanks, Richard, for coming by.
Enjoyed it as always. Thank you, James.
Thank you. And many thanks as well to you, James Horncastle, and you, listener. And for now, from all of us here, it's arrivederci. Campionato di
calcio italiano. You've been listening to Galazzo, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com, and make sure you check out our other podcasts this season. The Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker and the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.